This is a Mexican Crossing Lines.
Oh, freedom!
Freedom!
Oh.
Hello and welcome to A Mexican Crossing Lines. This is Cindy Gomez-Shump.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shump.
And today we are doing the fourth part, part four, mm-hmm. of my series on private prisons. We've been talking about this, prisons in general, throughout the month of August for Black August. You may recall that I talked a little bit about that. And today we're focusing primarily on the Wynn Correctional Facility, the article by Shane Bauer called My 4 Months as a Private Prison Guard, which was published in Mother Jones magazine. Mm-hmm. And the specific areas of this article we will touch on today are about various forms of, I would call them torture or abuse,
yeah.
or corruption,
exactly.
that go on inside the prison in terms of the court. And I say court like that because to me it's a kangaroo court. Mm-hmm. It's not a real court.
That's right.
It isn't a court. So the fact that they have these trials inside of the prison, to me would constitute a form of kangaroo court.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk also about personality tests that they give to the staff and the guards, as well as the personality changes that people go through when they're inside of the prison.
I suppose it affects them deeply.
It does. And we will also talk about The Dog Team.
Hmm.
Yes.
The Dog Team.
It sounds ominous, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
The Dog Team.
The Dog Team.
It's not a good thing. If we have time, we'll also talk a little bit about the mailroom. And for folks that are just tuning in, this is 88.1 FM KPPP LP Fargo Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. You can also find us online. We're broadcasting on Shoutcast. Go to kppfm.com and click on the Listen Live link.
You know, there's ways you can chime in and get involved with these conversations, too. You can contact us at 701-566-0917. You can leave us a message. Tell us who you are. We'll record it. We may play it on the air. Tell us where you live. You can also tweet us at @media_PPP. You can email Cindy at kppfm.com or Duke at kppfm.com. You can follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
Mm-hmm. By the way, if you go to our Facebook pages, you will see us announce upcoming articles, programs, trainings, any way that you can participate with the radio station. For example, right now we are looking for volunteers that want to come and learn the skills of broadcasting.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested, it doesn't matter if you don't have any training, we can teach you.
That's what
we do here at KPPP FM. Also, we do announcements of upcoming programs
like
the new Queer, the only queer radio program in the Red River Valley, Finding Me, which is going to premiere on Wednesday, at 5 o'clock, is it?
At 5 o'clock, 5 to 6. Their first show is going to be a two-hour show.
A special premiere show, two hours.
It's on the 17th, Wednesday at 5 o'clock. You should listen.
It's going to be a great show.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that, you know, out of full disclosure, my child is one of the guests.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the great and beautiful Darcy Corbett. So you have to check it out. It's going to be an amazing show. But let's go back to our topic today. We're talking about the private prisons. Specifically, this article focuses on a prison in Louisiana that is run by CCA Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And the article was written in Mother Jones by senior reporter Shane Bauer, who had previously reported on solitary confinement, police militarization, and the Middle East, as well as co-authoring a book with Sarah Shroud and Joshua Fatal titled Sliver of Light, which is an account of his 2 years at a prison in Iran. So the guy is very, very well versed in this type of writing in military and prison and cop type of reporting. And here he goes into a prison as a guard, undercover.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to play the videos. You can find these on YouTube if you go to our Facebook page or our website. Along with this show, we'll have the link there for you to this article. And there's a series of videos you can watch. This is the audio from one of them about CCA's prison, Wynn Correctional Facility.
No structure. Unsafe. Just a bad place. Hell. In a can.
This prison is crazy. Beyond anything I ever imagined.
To be honest with you, I didn't think it was going to happen. It was just kind of a whim. I put in an application with the Corrections Corporation of America for prison guard jobs. A week later, I start getting calls. I was surprised how quickly it happened.
I don't know how long I'm going to be doing this. I don't know where it's going to take me. I don't know what my job will entail.
Company and these big private prison companies in general are kind of notoriously secretive.
Corrections Corporation of America began around 1983.
CCA, the GEO Group, and MTC operate more than 130 facilities nationwide.
Combined revenues of these two companies reached $3.3 billion in 2014.
very hard for journalists to get information about these prisons.
Are you aware that they were lobbyists for Corrections Corporation of America?
Officials wouldn't say what started the riot.
Are they as safe? Are they under the same standards?
A riot broke out today.
Guards looked on but didn't do anything.
Four inmates are dead.
Eight inmates hospitalized.
46 prisoners ended up needing medical attention.
We are America's leader in partnership corrections. We are CCA.
The first time that I went in there, I mean, I was very nervous.
I almost had a heart attack like 5 times, yeah. It's gonna be hard to adjust to. I just wanted to get out like as soon as I could. And I was in there for like a half hour. Soon I'm gonna be in there for 8 hours a day, and then soon after that I'm gonna be in there for 12 hours a day. Oh, God. Love you too. Okay, bye.
This part of America in particular is very poor. The main employers in the area are the lumber mill, Walmart, and CCA.
No, it's really not too many jobs. You actually have to go out of town to find a job.
Logging woods or lumber mill.
Either you have a job or you're selling dope, and that's it.
So people are willing to take a very dangerous job for $9 or $10 an hour. Today was my first day on the job. I feel like I just entered this huge world. I was exposed to a couple different chemical agents. As part of the graduation, in true corporate style, I got a swag bag, a little card. Remember, failure is not an option. Thank you. A keychain that is a little pair of handcuffs. Some CCA shades, which I think, when combined with my CCA hat, gives me a pretty mean look. What do you think?
Hey, hold on a minute.
So, you get to hear a little bit about the area, the types of opportunities for the people that live there.
Yeah.
The correctional officers, what kinds of dangers they're going to have to face and what kind of pay they're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
And inside, I mean, the way that he paints this picture, it's as if people are happy to work a very dangerous job for $9 a day. You really think they're happy?
No, I don't think they're happy.
I think they're desperate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they have many other options. I mean, it isn't the same as being a prisoner,
mm-hmm.
but when you don't have any other options for work and you have to take a horrible and dangerous job that you wouldn't otherwise take because there aren't any other options for you in a place like, you know, this town,
mm-hmm.
what's the difference between being forced to do it?
That's right.
And you know, being happy to do it.
Mm-hmm. Probably the only difference is you get to leave at the end of the day if you're lucky.
Right. I mean, the inmates have to be there all the time. But in a previous show where they were talking about how they ran the institution,
mm-hmm.
and we talked also about the officer, correctional officer to inmate ratio,
mm-hmm.
which is like 1 to every 176 inmates.
Yeah.
It's really poor.
Yeah, it is.
They're not well staffed. They're not well trained.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of crazy things that go on inside the prison. We talked a lot about this in the past 3 parts that we've done.
Yes.
And we encourage you to listen to all of these because it will give you a real clear picture of what goes on inside prisons. And it's something very rare.
Definitely. You just go to kppfm.com and click on the podcast link and you can look at Prisons Part 1, Prisons Part 2, Prison Part 3. This is Part 4. You know, we also did a another show in the middle of that on immigration, and that's a very good show too.
Detention centers.
Detention centers, yes.
Yep, and we will do more shows on the detention facilities. There's a new report that just came out where the Department of Justice identifies that the greatest abuses going on in the private prison industry is within the detention centers.
Yeah, yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
If the greater amount of problems are occurring in the private prisons than in the public state-run prisons,
mm-hmm.
it just stands to reason that the greatest amount of problems within the private prison industry, which I told you is 90% for CCA, about 90% of the facilities they run are detention centers and juvenile facilities.
Mm-hmm.
So they control about 8% of the market of the total inmate population. So talking about some of the things that go on inside of these facilities, they have these court proceedings that are not really...
Yeah, they're court inside the prisons.
Right.
They have a little courtroom and they have someone appointed as a judge. Probably no jury. I don't know.
No, they don't have a jury. They do have a quote-unquote judge, but she's not really a judge. She's the assistant chief of security at the prison.
I see.
And so she's an employee of the prison. And I'll tell you why that matters so much in a little bit here. But she's the one, the final decider on all of this. And so anytime that an inmate is written up for breaking any rule, not just stabbing somebody or you know, killing someone or doing something that would be considered a crime outside of the facility, but for any kind of rule infraction that a guard or staff member deems something to write up about.
Punishable.
Exactly. And this is all held in Cypress Hall. And during their training, they're taken to the little courtroom to watch the hearings.
I see.
And the cadets watch, Shane Bauer describes a couple of the hearings. In one, well, first of all, he says that, you know, he explains that this is not a court of law, although they do issue punishments for felonies like assault or attempted murder.
Wow.
And, you know, like an inmate who stabs another inmate might end up with a few criminal charges. They also might be transferred out of Wynn facility. And even other prisoners and guards say that inmates who stab other inmates are not shipped to higher security prisons at all. So the consequences can range even within the same crime, quote unquote.
Wow.
But, you know, for lesser offenses, there's usually just, they're just sent to segregation. They're sent to SEG, as it's called. Or they might lose their good time. You know, that you get time off of your prison sentence for good time served.
Yeah.
Well, they take that away from them so they don't have any of that. And according to the Department of Corrections, when inmates that are charged with serious rule violations are found guilty in their courts 96% of the time.
Oh.
Does that sound fair to you?
No, it doesn't. In a previous show, we talked a lot about how the facilities want to keep the prisoners in there because they're making money. They're making money for every day a prisoner is in their prison. And so for them to have the authority, you know, self-imposed authority, to be able to tack on time to a prisoner's sentence, to me, that would be a violation of their civil rights and constitutional rights to have a fair trial with, you know, with their peers judging them. You know, that's not happening. They're basically 96% of the time getting more time tacked on.
One misnomer about people being in prison is that people assume that you retain certain rights. That, you know, we hear about prisoners being starved, being killed, all sorts of horrible, being raped by prison guards, all sorts of terrible things happening. And we think, well, that couldn't be possibly true because those folks still have rights in there. And, and if that were happening, someone would know about it and people would be getting charged and there would be trials, et cetera. That's not true at all. Most of the stuff that happens inside the prisons is never heard of outside of the prisons, like these trials. So they do get to kind of make up their own rules. And one of the correctional officers that was training, or that, you know, Shane Bauer was shadowing during his training, told him when he found out he was new, he's like, "It's the CCA way." That's what it says on their signs, you know. He says, "Do you know what that means?" And he says, "No, what does it mean?" And he goes, "Anything you want it to mean."
Oh, really? Wow.
So you got it right there. You know, they can basically make up their own rules. So there's an inmate council. So you can have like a prisoner that represents you, like a jailhouse lawyer, they call them.
Jailhouse lawyer, yeah.
And that person is part of the internal disciplinary process. But every year that they're taken to a state-run prison, the lawyers, the in-house lawyers,
okay,
for trainings, special intensive training. And that most of these folks actually get access to the legal library within the prison so that they can help represent the inmates.
Yeah.
So they go to this training and they do all this stuff. And yet, the assistant security officer that is the judge, quote unquote, tells Shane Bauer later on after the trials that the inmate lawyers never influence her decisions.
Oh. I might as well not even have them.
Well,
her mind is made up.
That's kind of what it sounds like to
me. Mm-hmm.
One of the trials that they witnessed, the cadets saw, lasted only 2 minutes.
Wow.
The assistant chief of security slash judge ended the trial by saying this to the inmate. Do you remember in the Gospel of John when the adulteress was brought before Jesus? What did he say? And the inmate responded, I don't remember that, ma'am. And she said, he said, sin no more. And then she pointed him out the room. You know, get out.
You're done.
It's like, does this person think that they're a judge or that they're an emperor or Caesar or something?
Yeah.
You'll get a lot of glimpses of this. I don't know how to call it other than like arrogant pride in themselves that a lot of these correctional people have. It's like they have this power trip.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll talk a little bit more about why that is in a minute here. But one of the other trials that they saw was for an inmate who also worked as an orderly. I told you that some of the inmates get to have jobs and they're trusted in the facility and they're given special privileges to move around outside of their cells. So this guy was one of those guys, and he was being charged with being in an unauthorized area because he had taken a broom and started to sweep a tier during a time when he wasn't supposed to be authorized to be sweeping the tier.
I see.
But as he tried to explain to the assistant chief of security slash judge that a correctional officer had actually given him permission to go and sweep that during that time, she cut him off. And she found him guilty of 30 more days. She added 30 more days of time to his sentence and a loss of all of his good time.
Oh, boy.
And he freaked out. He started screaming and cussing and went down the hall screaming and cussing that they'd done this to him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was pretty upsetting because just removing that broom from that closet at the wrong time of day to do a job he is charged with doing at this prison. That's his job. He had to face another 30 days in prison for which CCA made over $1,000.
Oh, and that one person.
On just that one.
Wow.
So you can see this literally translate, these trials literally translate into more money for them. So they have zero incentive to not charge these people.
Exactly.
Especially with extra time. So moving on to the personality test, they talked about having these personality tests, and also they talked about the personality changes that they experienced, Shane experienced over the time that he was there. And they had this test called the True Colors Test, and it's a placement test that allows the staff at the prison to figure out what kind of correctional officer you're going to be good at. And so they have these gold, color-coded orientations for each group.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is gold. And so if you're a gold person, then you're a person that would be chosen to daily management of inmates.
I see.
You would be good at that.
I see. The gold thing.
Yes, the gold one. Yeah. And orange is considered somebody that's useful in hostage negotiations because they don't waste time deliberating. So the orange people are, you know, action people, and the gold people are more rule-oriented people.
I see.
And Miss Blanchard, one of the ladies that's giving them the test, says that the majority of the staff are rule-oriented people.
Oh, yeah.
Rule followers.
Yep.
dutiful, punctual people who value rules.
Mm-hmm.
And Shane Bauer takes the test, and his result shows him to be, his dominant color to be green, which is analytical and curious.
Yeah.
And the second color to be, his secondary color was orange, which is free and spontaneous.
Mm-hmm.
And he was told that green is a very rare personality type at Wynn facility. And when he asked the lady that gave them the test what he could do, they didn't offer any examples of how green people could be useful in a person.
Well, you know,
they do test for officers too.
Okay.
And they have literally admitted that if you are too smart, they will not hire you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
This is not quite as blatant as saying that, but mm-hmm. it sounds like it's the same thing.
It sure does.
The company that markets these tests says that people that retake it will always get the same result 94% of the time. But the lady that was giving them the test said that people that have worked there a while often find that their colors change over time. So okay. the people themselves, their personalities change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And guess what color ends up being the most dominant in the majority of the people that work there?
Gold.
Gold.
Oh, okay.
The rule-oriented people.
Yes,
the
course.
Robots that mm-hmm. follow the rules.
I got it. Yes.
So studies have been done about personality changes in prison environments. And they have shown that personality changes dramatically in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in 1971, a psychologist, Philip Zimbardo, conducted the now famous Stanford Prison Experiment. I don't know if we've talked about that before on our show, but it's a very well-known experiment.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
which one I'm
was
talking
the one
about,
with
right?
the shocking and increasing the levels? Is that the one?
No, it was a... They randomly assigned college students to take the roles of prisoners and guards.
Oh, yeah. I
and then they
that.
Had a makeshift yeah. basement prison. It was yeah. in the college
yes.
they did this.
Yeah.
And they didn't like take personality tests to see who's more criminal and who's like more good. They just randomly selected and said, you're going to be a prisoner and you're going to be a guard. And things quickly became insane.
Mm-hmm.
They had profound changes that were happening in the guards and in the prisoners. The guards became sadistic. They forced prisoners to sleep on concrete, to sing and dance for them, mm-hmm. to poop in buckets, to strip them naked. Then by the end of 2 weeks, everything had gone so wacko. They had to cut the whole experiment short.
Yeah, they weren't being scripted to do any of that either.
No.
Those things they were doing on their own, just being in the environment, taking on the role they were playing, a prisoner, a guard, or a prisoner.
And that is exactly what happens inside the prisons.
Mm.
It doesn't just happen. Remember when we were talking about the background of a lot of these correctional officers?
Mm-hmm.
Many of them have been in the prison.
Yes.
They're former inmates, or they've committed crimes of their own, which they talk about, like, mm-hmm. you know, getting high or stealing from the inmates.
Exactly.
And we'll talk more about how many of these prisoner guards exhibit these changes in their own behavior. In fact, they're told right from the beginning when they come in, don't have sex with the inmates and don't be a crooked guard. Don't
mm-hmm.
bring stuff in here.
Yeah.
And yet the majority of the contraband gets into the prison through the correctional officers
yes, yes.
themselves bringing it in. So after this experiment took place, when it was over, many of the guards became very ashamed of what they'd done to some of the prisoners, you know, quote unquote prisoners.
Yeah.
They were so traumatized by it that this trauma lasted for years after
this
6-day experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine actually working at a real prison for
exactly.
months and mm-hmm. months and months?
Mm-hmm. That
it's
was only
incredible.
2 weeks. It was only a 2-week experiment.
It was a 6-day experiment.
Oh, 6 days. It was supposed
six
to last
days.
2 days, but
it was supposed to last 2 weeks, but
two
it
weeks,
never
yes.
made it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, the lesson from this, which was in the article that Shane Bauer wrote about this experiment, he wrote about it. They said that, you know, we all want to believe in our inner power, our sense of personal agency to resist external situation forces of the kinds operating in this Stanford experiment, which made these guards turn into these evil people.
Mm-hmm.
And Philip Zimbardo said, for many, that belief of personal power to resist powerful situations and systemic forces is little more than a reassuring illusion of invulnerability.
Wow.
Because the truth is that we are not invulnerable to that. He said in the article, are the soldiers of Abu Ghraib or even Auschwitz guards and ISIS hostage takers inherently different from you and me?
Hmm.
That's a good question.
It is.
Because we like to take comfort in the notion that there is an unbridgeable gulf, as Shane put it, between good and evil. And I know I'm good.
Yeah.
And I can tell what's evil. But the truth is that maybe we should understand, as this work from the psychologist suggested, that evil is incremental. It's like the boiling frog.
Mm-hmm.
Something we can all be capable of in the right set of circumstances.
Yeah.
And that sounds like when facility is the right set of circumstances. Mm-hmm. We'll continue talking about this and the changes in other people after we take a quick musical break here at A Mexican Crossing Lines.
Another night in the streets, another night in this hell. I've been kicking and tripping, the cops threw me in jail. Got my fingers in ink, they got my head under lights. Dear Lord, please get me out of jail tonight. Cause I've been in it before, and then I know what it's like to be cold, shaking on the floor to sell all night. And the cuffs up my hands, and then I can't feel my feet. And all I'm thinking about now is getting back in the streets. All the cops looking in, and they didn't know what it's like to be a hustler who hustling for the scratch every night. But they can't know about my world, and they can't feel this heat. And they ain't never gonna know what it's like in the street. It wasn't always as rough, it wasn't always as bad. I didn't always struggle for the life that I had. But I played the wrong move, I was destined to fail. It's got me sitting here thinking, all alone in this jail. I've been thinking about my home, I've been thinking about my kids. I don't wanna be alone, I gotta get up out of this. Get me out, just get me out. I've been thinking about some things, I've been thinking about my life. I don't wanna lose my kids, I don't wanna lose my wife. Get me out, just get me out. Another night in this room, another night in this cell. Another night I'm still thinking about what got me in jail. And the day goes the night, and the night back to day. All the world suck around me just like a rat in a maze. I can hear the girl screaming, I can hear her on the phone. I can hear her saying, baby, when are you coming home? And there's a pretty girl who talks about a gun, and she yelling, I shoot back at those suckers who come. Now with all of these words messing around in my head, I'm not feeling to stay, I'm feeling half dead. But the doors are all locked, the guards ignoring my screams. I'm just looking up praying, Lord, please say it's a dream. No, maybe I'm wrong, well, for choosing this life. But a man out of no hell, wrong from right. It's a lesson I learned, at least I tried to be the one looking in at the prison side. I've been thinking about my home, I've been thinking about my kids. I don't wanna be alone, I gotta get up out of this. Give me out, just give me out. I've been thinking about some things, I've been thinking about my life. I don't wanna lose my kids, I don't wanna lose my wife. Give me out, just give me out. And the doors open up, and they leave me outside. And they hand me my clothes, and the key to my ride. Now the night hits my face, and it brings me to life. Oh Lord, now I'm out that jail tonight. Another night in my street, another night in my head. Now I'm kicking and tripping without the cops on my chair. Now my hands on the wheel and my fingers real tight. I'm gonna go home to my family tonight. I've been thinking about my home, I've been thinking about my kids. I don't wanna be alone, I gotta get up out of this. Give me out, just give me out. I've been thinking about some things, I've been thinking about my life. I don't wanna lose my kids, I don't wanna lose my wife. Give me out, just give me out. By my home, I've been thinking about my kids. I don't wanna be alone, I gotta get up out of this. Just give me out, just give me out. I've been thinking about some things, I've been thinking about my life. I don't wanna lose my kids, I don't wanna lose my wife. Give me out, just give me out. You know what I'm saying? It's your boy Lil Droppers. Just letting all y'all know, jail ain't the place to be right now. You feel me? So think twice before you make that choice to do something wrong. You feel me? Be easy. Yeah.
Hello and welcome back to A Mexican Crossing Lines with Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And we are talking today about part four, private prisons, specifically the Wynn Correctional Facility. If you just tuned into our show, you can find parts one, two, and three at our website at kpppfm.com, where we are also broadcasting on Shoutcast, so mm-hmm. you can listen live to us there. Just go to kpppfm.com and click on the Listen Live link. This is 88.1 KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves.
And we would love you to give us some feedback, give us some comments. You can reach us many ways. One way is you can call us at our message line at 701-566-0917. Again, that number is 701-566-0917. You can leave a message. It's a message line. We'll take your message. We may play it on the air. Tell us who you are, where you live. You can also tweet us at media_PPP. You can also do email. You can email Cindy at kpppfm.com, or you can email me, Duke at kpppfm.com. You can go to Facebook and follow us at 88.1 FM Fargo-Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi-Can.
Yes, you can, and you should. I'd like to direct people to the topics that we were covering today, among which were the different forms of chaos inside the prison, and including the way in which people's personalities change.
Yeah.
And there was one great example in the story of how Shane Bauer, the reporter, was changed himself. He started to change, and he tells about the experience during the third week of his training, when he was assigned to work in the dining hall, or the chow hall, as they call it, inside. And his job basically was to tell all the inmates where to sit. And he talks about how he doesn't understand why they do this. So it seems like it's just a random thing they chose to do. Instead of letting people just pile in and sit wherever they wanted, they tell them where to sit, and they have to fill one row of tables at a time. So he is told by his captain that's in the chow hall training him that he has to start clearing inmates out when he's done filling up one side.
Okay. So real quick.
Very quick. Yeah. So as soon as he's done filling up one side with inmates that are sitting down and eating, he's got to clear out a whole other side of inmates. Uh-huh. And he tells Bauer that they only get 10 minutes to eat. Wow. Even though the cadets have just completed their training, just learned in their class that the inmates get 20 minutes to eat.
Okay.
So
changing the rules.
Basically, yeah, just whatever he wants, they change the rules as they go. So what happens is that one man that is told by Bauer to sit at one table refuses to sit at that table. He goes and sits at another table. And when Bauer goes and tells him to move, he doesn't.
Okay.
So this starts freaking him out. Mm-hmm. His orders are not being followed. And his supervisor is watching him. Mm-hmm. And hundreds of inmates are all watching him. And he feels like a punk.
Yeah.
And so he gets very angry. He starts yelling at the inmate. And when the inmate doesn't listen, he goes and gets the muscle-bound captain to come over and yell at the inmate. And he describes his feelings. He said, "I'm shaking with fear. Project confidence. Project power. I stand tall, broaden my shoulders, and stride up and down the floor, making enough eye contact with people to show I'm not intimidated, but not holding it long enough to threaten them." I tell inmates to take off their hats as they enter. They listen to me, and part of me likes that.
Okay, yeah.
For the first time, just for a moment, I forget that I'm a journalist. I watch for guys sitting with their friends rather than where they were told to. I scan the room for people sneaking back in line for more food. I tell inmates to get up and leave while they're still eating. I look closely to make sure that no one has an extra cup of Kool-Aid.
Boy.
It sounds like he's going crazy. Like, yeah, he's just like turning into this micromanaging jerk.
Yeah.
And then they went to see the dog team.
Okay.
Remember I told you about the dog team?
The dog team, yes.
This part was really freaky because they had this out behind the prison. They have a barn.
Okay.
And they were taken out to this barn, and it sounded like it was a good old boy barn where they were playing country music, and there were like these angry looking COs that spat on the floor when they walked in and looked at them all like angry, like they don't really like visitors out there.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a place where the people that work out there kind of get to do their own thing.
Yeah.
And it's manned by some prison guards and their trustees. Remember what the trustees are?
Mm-hmm.
The guys that have special jobs and get special access to work at the facility and move around. And so they have their trustees that are working out there, plus a bunch of correctional officers, and they basically care for a herd, a small herd of horses and three packs of bloodhounds.
Okay.
And I'm sure you can imagine what they do with these horses and yep. these bloodhounds.
They chase prisoners.
Well, actually, the horses used to be mounted by the correctional officers with shotguns, who oversaw hundreds of inmates as they went to tend the grounds every single day, which is something they used to be able to do when they had more prison guards.
Yeah.
But now that they don't have more prison guards, they had to stop doing the use of the horses for overseeing inmates working. The shotguns, many times when they had the inmates working on out in the yards, were used to kill people who would try to make a run for it.
Yeah.
And one of the longtime staff members there told this reporter slash cadet that you don't actually have to shoot to kill. You just have to shoot to stop the inmates.
Yeah.
And then she sarcastically said, "Oops, I killed him. Oh. I told him to stop. Oh, well, we can always get another inmate."
Oh, boy.
So the seriousness of their rules, if you can call them that, is not very, you know, it just seems
not
like
humane
you can,
at all.
It just feels like you can change the rules, bend the rules, that no rules are really rules. You don't actually have to follow the rules. And as it goes throughout the article, you see that almost everything that they're told in training isn't true or isn't done in that way.
Okay.
Or it's not represented inside of the prison in the way that they were taught it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which these penny-pinching tactics shorten the capacity and the resources of the prisons to actually run them effectively is that they don't have any activities for the inmates and for the guards to, you know, to be able to deal with people that are doing something productive all day. They're dealing with angry, pent-up emotions and a bunch of energy from people that are mostly in segregation or in confinement in their cells most of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, both the prisoners and the correctional officers waxed nostalgically about the good old days when the prisoners had jobs and they could take them out into the, you know, the yard and have them do groundwork.
Exactly.
Because then they weren't aggressive and they had used up their energies and they would go and go back to their cells all pooped out and go to sleep, you know?
Exactly.
So it worked out really well. But, and by the way, it is CCA's requirement under their contract that they sign with the state that they will assign the inmates. That means all the inmates will be assigned to quote unquote productive full-time activity.
Yeah, it's a very, very loose definition there.
5 days a week.
Wow.
5 days a week, they have to be involved in productive full-time activity. And the fact is that very few of the inmates actually are, except for the trustees, which we talked about.
Yeah.
So the work programs at the facility were dropped right around the same time they got rid of the guard towers, the guard people in the guard towers, which we learned.
Yep, put cameras up there and one person watching a bunch of screens.
Right, which results in people escaping from the prison pretty easily, from what it sounded like to me.
Cheaper, but very ineffective.
Not effective at all. And they also cut most of the vocational programs. They turned the hobby shops where people did crafts and things like that into storage facilities, and they limited the access to the law library. But even for those that do have access to the library that are the, you know, legal counsel inside the prisons, as you heard, their work isn't much of anything.
They're not valued or they're not listened to. They don't really play a real role.
No. So it's all kind of window dressing. There aren't enough guards to watch over the yard. So the big recreational yard is empty all the time. They don't let them even go outside to walk around in the big yard. And when this reporter asked CCA about the lack of classes, the lack of recreation, the lack of other activities, CCA insisted that, quote, "these resources and programs were largely available to inmates." How?
How, yeah.
They obviously weren't, But they just insisted, you know, it's funny when you hear some of these things in other reports, other news stories of prison breaks or prison riots or people hunger striking at prisons. Mm-hmm. And you hear the contrast of the prisons saying, that's not true. There's no hunger strike happening here. We're not aware of anything like that. It's hard to know whether or not one is true or the other is true. But here you have a reporter who is reporting every day what he sees at his job for 4 months.
4 months. Wow.
Not one day, not 1 week, for 4 months. And they have the audacity to just spout back to him, that's not true. Mm-hmm. And they think that that is somehow in any way believable to the readers of the story? I don't get it. And they also said that their work programs were cut during contract negotiations with the Department of Corrections. Hmm. And that they acknowledged that there were some gaps in program due to brief periods of staffing vacancies.
Oh, yeah.
And that is absolutely untrue because the turnover rate at these facilities is very high, as we've talked about in other programs, and as we will also talk about here today. So what that translates into for the correctional officers is as they do their work over time, they change their approaches in how they do their work so that they don't stress themselves that much, so that they don't have to write up as much paperwork or, you know, whatever corners they can cut. As many of the inmates said to the correctional officers, they don't pay you enough to break up a fight.
Yeah.
They don't pay you enough to be a cop around here. Mm-hmm. You know, just pick up your paycheck and look the other way.
Yeah.
Leave us alone and we'll leave you alone.
Mm-hmm.
One of the correctional officers working with Bauer was complaining about how, you know, back in the good old days, they used to beat the crap out of the inmates. And now they can't really do that. But another of the correctional officers said, oh, hell yeah, we can. We could totally beat the crap out of people. You just need to know how to do it.
Oh, okay.
And then another correctional officer chimed in and says, and where to do it, alluding to the fact that you have to stay out of the sight of the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So it's as if, you know, they clearly know how to violate the rights of the inmates. And they do so and with frequency enough that they can talk about it.
Definitely. And you know, with really no system, I can imagine that you have a complaint. How's that complaint going to be heard from anybody?
Or tracked.
Or tracked, yes.
Right. So since they have no work programs to oversee, the trustees that and the guards that work at in the horse thing basically take the bloodhounds and the horses to any of the 13 nearby parishes and help police in those parishes chase down prisoners and suspects.
Oh, really?
Of crimes. Yep. Wow. They've actually apprehended armed robbers and murder suspects with those horses and those bloodhounds.
Hmm.
So one of the correctional officers that is in the horse hut or barn, whatever, the dog unit.
Dog unit,
He shows the other cadets a picture of this guy who's got his neck all cut up and his face all bit up. And he tells them that one of the dogs, if the dogs bite them, you know, get to one of the inmates, they're going to, you know, screw up their faces. Yeah. They're going to hurt them.
Yeah.
And that they're, that what they do is he talks about how every single day he releases an inmate and then catches that inmate.
Really?
Yep.
Practice.
Right.
Oh, my God.
So they use the inmates as practice. They let them wear a bite suit.
Oh, great.
To protect them. And then they tell them to go. You know, they might go so as far as 2 miles away from the barn. And then they tell them to go up a tree and tell them to you know, stay away from the dogs.
Yeah.
But when they turn the dogs loose on them, if they get caught by the dog, if they fall out of the tree, if they don't get away from the dog, if the dog grabs them the wrong way, they're going to get bit horribly like this guy did. And the correctional officers talked about it like it was no big deal.
Wow.
He was the CCA people responded to Shane Bauer that it was, you know, minor injuries, but he could see in the picture of the guy that was shown to them that the guy looked like he'd been, you know, sewn up pretty, you know, it looked horrible.
It is horrible. It's like the Nazi Germany all over again, when the Nazis are experimenting on the Jews, you know?
Yeah, but they think they, for them, it's just part of their job. Mm-hmm. They sound like the cops, exactly, yeah, like the cops. Exactly. It's just part of our job. It's, mm-hmm, they said part of the business. It's part of the business. And they're talking about having to kill an inmate or having to beat up an inmate. And the correctional officers pretty much felt entitled to kill an inmate, especially if they felt they were being attacked. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Sound a lot like cops to me.
Mm-hmm.
Another one agreed, saying that, you know, it was just part of doing the business that they had to do. Like, for example, the way that he had to use force on an inmate that had just gotten out of heart surgery.
Oh, boy.
Just part of the business.
Mm-hmm.
That officer's name, by the way, is Kenny in the story, and he had already been a veteran of Wynn Correctional Facility for 12 years.
Wow, 12 years.
Yeah. And in his view, the inmates were customers. And he was one of the teachers of class, and he lectured on the cost-effective principles that CCA had, which required the correctional officers to provide honest and fair competitive pricing to our partners and deliver value to our shareholders.
Oh, yes, the shareholders again.
It sounds like private prisons turns, you know, human interest into corporate interest, mm-hmm, and that can go horribly awry.
Yeah.
One of the things that the Department of Corrections does is to try to avoid getting sued.
Yeah.
Often. So they give us, they put a certain amount of money aside to manage the facility, and then they put a certain amount of money aside to deal with the lawsuits. But if they go over the budget, then it's, you know, it's like any other job. The, mm-hmm, people that are working there are going to have to cut staff and wages,
yeah,
so that they can keep afloat. And, you know, he talks also about the fact that he learned to control his temper over his tenure of 12 years by not sitting up at bed writing disciplinary reports while his wife was sleeping, like he had done in the beginning of his tenure. And he said that, you know, the better way of dealing with this is if somebody gave him a smart mouth or didn't keep his tidy bed, he would just throw them in segregated confinement.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Which is a horrible way of changing, mm-hmm, you know, the way he managed his job. And he said, you know, the rules had to be followed. And he also believed that inmates should be treated fairly and get what they needed. And that he felt he prided himself on being fair, but also said that it's not something that he's overly concerned with, the violation of the rights of these inmates. So he tells all of the people there, and they're very nervous about this, especially Shane Bauer. This is where paranoia starts setting in for, mm-hmm, him. That he's on the hiring committee, and that his job is not just to train the COs and watch inmates. He's also there to watch COs.
Yeah.
Because he's going to report any, you know, thing that they do wrong to the warden directly.
Hmm.
And when they started this training, he tells them basically that, you know, there's like five cadets in the room, and he says, three of you are going to be dirty. Like half of you are going to end up being dirty, and you're going to end up leaving this job.
Yeah.
So that is the climate in which these folks are working. I hope that gives our listeners a better idea, both for the correctional officers and the inmates, of what a dangerous and frightening place Wynn Correctional Facility and private prisons in general are. And we will be doing part 5,
oh, yeah,
where we will talk about the mailroom. We didn't get a chance to talk about the mailroom today.
No.
It's very, very sad what happens to the prisoners inside and the kinds of restrictions they face.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about all of that on part 5 of the private prison industry here on A Mexican Crossing Lines. Thank you for listening. I'm